adjourn certain item, please. We're going to read items 313 and 314 together, please.
313, accept a grant in the amount of $112,500 from Metro for the Rossi Farms Development Plan and authorize an intergovernmental agreement. And 314, accept a grant in the amount of $125,000 from Metro for expanding opportunities for affordable housing in faith communities and authorize an intergovernmental agreement.
Colleagues, we're here today to approve two intergovernmental agreements and accept two grants for Metro. The first item, number 313, it's a grant for $112,500 for the Rossi Farms Development Plan. The second item, number 314, is a grant of $125,000 for expanding opportunities for affordable housing in faith communities. The first, Metro Construction Excise Tax, otherwise known as the CET grant, will help to fund a project to develop a concept plan for development for the 20-plus acre site, which is in East Portland. The second Metro grant will help fund partnerships with faith-based communities to develop affordable housing. Bureau Planning and Sustainability staff Eric Engstrom, Barry Manning, and Ann Stark, could you come on up and let's go through these items? And if you could start us off, please, with an overview, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Eric Engstrom. I'm with the Planning and Sustainability. With me is Nan Stark and Barry Manning, who will be the project managers for these projects. I want to start by just thanking Metro for their decision to fund these two projects. Both of these projects will help us further the new 2035 Comprehensive Plan goals and align with both city and regional policies. The grants provide funding for projects that might otherwise not be undertaken based on availability of local resources, and so we appreciate the opportunity to use the Metro resources. Barry will talk a little bit about the Rossi Farms project, and Nan will talk a little bit about the faith-based affordable housing project.
Great, thanks. Good morning. Barry Manning, Planning and Sustainability staff. Talking a little bit about the Rossi Farms development project. We're looking forward to beginning work on the Rossi Farms development plan. The grant will help fund consultant services and staff resources to develop a concept plan for this site. The site is one of the last remaining large undeveloped parcels within the city of Portland. I've got a PowerPoint slide of the aerial of the site I can show you at the end of this. We want to note, and I think it's important to note, that while the project was labeled and submitted as the Rossi Farms Development Plan, the site is actually owned by and supported in this grant by several families, the Rossi families, the Giusto families, and the Gary families, so it's a combination of ownerships there. The Park Grove School District is also in the study area and has a small parcel that's in the focus area and is a property owner in the area as well, so there's substantial interest there. The site's located, as you may well know, on a prominent corridor, 122nd Avenue. It's proximate to several schools, including Park Rose High School and Beach Park. So this offers a really unique opportunity for placemaking in an area in Northeast Portland. The site is also in an area that we feel could potentially benefit from new investment in community-serving commercial activities, perhaps a grocery store, as well as housing that serves a variety of income levels. Both of these aspects would help complete and work towards accomplishing goals in the comprehensive plan for complete communities. The project, as I noted, is supported by the families who own portions of the site, as well as the Park Rose School District, TriMet, and the Park Rose Neighborhood Association, who all submitted letters of support. And I just want to conclude that our collective goal with this project is to really develop a thoughtful concept plan that meets the goals of the city, the community, Metro, and local stakeholders, while providing a viable path forward for the property owners of the site. And Carl, if you could, oh, you have it up there, great. That's showing the entire study area outlined in yellow, and you can see that there is some undeveloped farmland in there to the right of the screen, which is to the east of 122nd. And the next slide here shows
before
a red.
Before you move from that slide, in the.
Are you back at the first slide you're saying?
Yeah. When you're at right now, mm-hmm. next to the middle school, it's included an area that looks like single-family homes. Are those all independently owned?
towards the north of the study area?
Yes.
Some of them are part of this ownership. I'm sorry, I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
Kind of bottom left. I don't know whether that's north or south. The single-family homes that are right next to it, I believe that's the middle school.
Yes, single-family houses on the bottom. I'm looking at the bottom right. And the bottom left, yes, those would be individual houses in that area. I'll have to do some research on that to clarify exactly what the property ownership is in that area.
Yeah, I'm just interested as to why that's included in the planning area.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. Apartments that are within the study area but are not included in the focus area of the study, which let me show you on the next slide what that is. So you can see the red dashed area here. That really is clarifying. This is the focus area for the majority of the work that will be undertaken with this study, with this development study. And that includes the Rossi, Gary, and Giusto properties, as well as a small portion of the Park Rose School District properties.
So then the next question is, why not the bottom right or the far right of that area?
Which would be the City of Portland Beach Park area, I believe. If I'm looking at what you're referring to.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So with that, I'll turn it over to Nan Stark.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mayor Wheeler and members of the council. I'm Nan Stark. I'm the North and Northeast District Liaison with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I'll be managing the $125,000 grant called Expanding Opportunities for Affordable Housing in Faith Communities. This grant will provide an opportunity for the city to partner with several organizations representing the faith community of Portland, as well as with several community development organizations. Grant money will be used to develop concept plans and financial feasibility analyses for three sites that will be selected. Engagement with leaders of faith communities will provide practical steps for other congregations to pursue housing projects consistent with their missions. The desired outcome of this grant is to create plans for developing affordable housing on land owned by religious institutions. This will serve as a model for other such institutions to follow in the future to address the affordable housing crisis. Any questions?
Are there specific... You said there are three specific sites that will be looked at?
No, they are to be selected.
Oh, they are to be selected.
Through the process. Okay.
Yeah. Commissioner Fritz.
I have a question for Barry, and that is on the development agreement. Is there a development agreement for the Rossi Farms project?
There is no development agreement to date. That could be a potential outcome of the study. Really, the intention here is to develop a concept plan that gives direction to potential development on the site. And then as we explore some of the issues that are at play there, that one of the outcomes could be some form of an agreement, but that's not anticipated up front.
So could you talk a little bit about the construction excise tax grants from Metro, what the rules are for those? I'm interested in why city money and Metro money is going into a planning, what's basically going to be a private development.
And I may defer to, I'll defer to Eric on that one since he's been more involved in those projects.
The Metro construction excise tax money, this grant program is intended to further the objectives of the 2040 Metro plan. And this is the focus of that grant program, is to provide development assistance for key parcels that some of which are at the edge of the UGB where we've recently expanded, and others are internal to the UGB. There's an allocation of money to those two different purposes. But it's typical within this program that we do private-public planning partnerships on private land. Basically, the intent of the program is to develop plans that help us meet public public goals for the development of those properties work with the property owners to further the potential development that's consistent with our planning goals.
So thank you. That explains the $112,500 from Metro. There's a $50,000 Bureau of Planning, basically general fund match for this. What's the basis for choosing to put general fund money into a essentially a private development?
We have, in our planning activities, we typically are involved in private-public planning activities because the majority of land in the city is privately owned. So, you know, our planning activities extend well beyond just looking at publicly owned land. The River District in the Central City, South Waterfront are other examples where we've put public money into development planning for private sites. That's very common in our work.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Very good. Does that complete your presentation?
Yes.
Is there a public testimony on these items, Carla, please?
We have two people signed up.
Great.
Shedrick Wilkins and Joe Walsh.
Good morning.
Yes, I know about Rossi Farms. I'm Mr. Shedrick. I was raised there. I was raised in 70th and Sandy. I used to pick strawberries. I don't know if Rossi Farms when I was like in high school and stuff like that. My feeling is about immigration. A lot of Hispanics from Mexico have farm jobs. Cesar Chavez, who was a union activist for farm workers, is equally as important as Dr. King. Even 39th named after him. I think those kind of skills for farm work is the basis. It's hard to really do pick strawberries or fruits with a machine. It bruises the fruit. So in California and Oregon, we have this relationship with farm workers. I like the area, too, because I love the campus of Mount Hood Community College, where people can, while they're doing janitorial jobs or farm jobs, they can learn skills to do more than that, or technical and scientific training. I mean, you could get 2 years at Mount Hood and then go to Oregon State, become a scientist or something, but you get a start there. So I like that area. If I have to be stuck in Portland the rest of my life, I will move out there. I believe in that area. And, you know, and you can see Mount Hood where, you know, the water and the stuff like that. I finally want to say, too, that even on that, next week I'm going out to Mount Hood Community College, and about immigration here, I guess a Mount Hood Community College school board guy said there were too many Hispanics in the campus. He got voted out 80% by a woman for saying something like that. And he's an example why we will accept immigrants like California. And again, I like that area. And I used to look up at the jet planes and think maybe these people flying in jets are eating strawberries that people picked on the ground, stuff like that.
Thank you. It's a great story. Thank you for sharing it. Good morning, sir.
Go ahead.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I'm having some trouble breathing, so I would ask for your patience. In the presentation, I heard the word affordable housing used, and I want you, the people that are watching this, to understand something. Affordable housing terminology is from HUD. It means nothing. Nothing. It has no correlation, no relationship to our homeless problem, our houses problem, or people that are suffering being let go. Nothing. It is up to you. It is up to the people that get the grant. It is up to the goodwill of you. Because it means nothing. It means anything you want it to mean. You can have 80%. You can have 60%. You can have 30%. And unless it's in writing, it means nothing. So I want the people to understand that when they hear the terminology, affordable housing, it's a con job. It's a political con job. And you got them all convinced. You use really good sugar words. You got them all convinced that you're doing everything you can to solve a lot of our problems in the streets and people that are dropping out. That Mr. Lightning told you is phenomenal. Even Mark, your director of the Joint Housing Committee, or the director of the agency or department or whatever he's called this month, says that there's 16,000 people living by their fingertips, and they keep dropping off. That's your affordable housing. You have to have money to get into affordable housing. I am affordable housing. I'm retired, so I could qualify for affordable housing, but I have to have some money. People on the street have no money. So it's a con job. You use the word, and then you use the word, well, we're going to help the people get off the street, and that is BS. Thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Don't thank me, Mayor.
I didn't. Good morning.
Thank you.
I hope you're feeling better. Thank you. Bye-bye.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Justice Watchdog. I do agree with both the grants from Metro. I think it's important to get that data in front of us to understand what can be done with certain properties. I understand on the Rossi development, they're looking at a tremendous amount of affordable housing at this time. So I do think it's necessary to start looking at the properties and understanding what can and can't be done with them toward affordable housing. Now, pertaining to the faith-based groups on the churches, I absolutely agree on this. I understand there's approximately 500 faith communities out there that have additional land. Again, I will stress to the faith-based communities, focus on this Metro bond and understand that the $1 billion, if we also amend the Constitution, can possibly go in this direction. And again, my projection at about $1 billion would be talking anywhere from $3,500 to $4,500 if we use an analysis of $300,000 per unit new inventory. That means creating a lot of jobs through the community, buying materials in the local community, and understanding that the benefits of this are tremendous at this time. So again, to the faith-based communities, get over to Metro, look up Metro, and understand there will be stakeholder and technical meetings, which they'll have everybody there, all the mayors and various mayors from all different locations, and attend these meetings to get a clear understanding on where you might fit in on this bond. And again, like I've stated, at the end of the day, on any of this, it comes down to the resources. It comes down to having the money there. That's what this bond is. And again, from Commissioner Salzman, Mayor Wheeler, on the city bond at $258 million, if we get a $1 billion bond from Metro, we're talking $1,258 million toward housing. Again, I'll just use the term housing for the most vulnerable to get them in. And again, this is the ability to do that, the resources to do that, and everything on paper looks good, but it's the resources that make it into reality. It's the resources that get the people off the streets into housing. Again, focus on the $1 billion bond. It's going to be put on the ballot in November, and they need your assistance at this time. Again, great work to the faith-based communities, and good luck on your projects. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
There we go. My name is Mary Seip. I'd like to address the term affordable housing. I do think that it's a little bit misleading. Most people, when they think affordable, they think I have a job. This is what I can afford. The term low income, working poor, might better reflect what we mean when we talk about affordable housing. And I think we have to think about the fact that in addressing our homeless crisis, we also have to address the future, not just what's happening today. I think about the fact that so many people's wages have been stagnant for years. People working on minimum wage are people that don't. No longer do we have the luxury of corporate-sponsored pension plans. We have 401ks and other, vehicles that people can put their money into to build a retirement fund. But when you're the working poor, you can't build a retirement fund. So what we have, and you also probably are never going to be able to buy a home. So what we have is we have a generation and a couple of generations of workers that are going to be lifetime renters. They are going to be at the mercy of the market. And they're also probably going to have nothing but Social Security to live on when they retire. And we have to be thinking about those people and the people who are disabled, who are living on SSI. Many of the people that are out on the street right now probably qualify for SSI and food stamps and could get into affordable low-income housing if it were available. When I moved into the affordable income-restricted housing development that I live in, almost 8 years ago, I was on a waiting list for 9 months. And actually, I got called at 3 months, but my lease where I was at wasn't up, and I was able to get in 9 months. Today, that same building, it takes about 4 years to get into. And on top of that, in my neighborhood, almost 600 additional units have been built within a six-block radius of where I live. So I think we have to be really careful when we talk about what we're addressing and not just dismiss affordable housing as not helping the people that are on the street right now. We have to also be thinking about the people that could end up on the street tomorrow or the day after because we don't have any safety net to catch those people and help those people. And so I just want to say anything I see with affordable housing does not make me angry. It makes me very happy, and it makes me feel much more secure in this community.
Mary, can I just make a comment? Because I think the language has become very confusing. And I think what we have to often remind ourselves is the question is affordable to whom? Over 95% of the housing that the market is creating in this community is luxury housing. So it is what the market will bear at the high end. That is not the kind of housing that people who are at 60% of median family income or below can afford to live in. So if we acknowledge that there's a mismatch between what the market's creating and what a whole lot of people need, we then understand what government's role is. And whether it's a carrot or a stick, if we don't act, we're not going to make a dent in that 24 to 30,000 units that we need to serve people who are sort of working class and below on the economic ladder. And when I use the term affordable housing, I'm talking about people who have either no assets and resources or up to about 60%. But again, I think it is important that we ask the question, affordable to whom? We all want to live in a city where people of all incomes can afford to live here. That's accepted. Middle income, working class, the very poor, and people of means. The problem is the market is now almost exclusively producing housing at the high end. And that's why we, using the bond measure, inclusionary housing, tax abatements, things like CDBG and home and other tools, are trying to create incentives for housing the market doesn't serve. And those are the people, in my opinion, who are at the most need of government assistance. It's uniquely what our role is, and that's what I think we generally mean when we talk about affordable housing.
Exactly. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
So I'd like to chime in, too. And I'm always a little disappointed that Mr. Walsh, he comes and he throws his bomb in the middle of the room, and then he picks up and he leaves. And then he never gets to hear the thoughtful conversation that he actually helped create. And, you know, that's just too bad. I use the words affordable housing to mean any number of things, but they all mean one thing in common, and that is below market rate. And during my campaign, I knew that people were confused by the term affordable housing, so I started saying workforce and low income and very low income housing. And then hilariously, the conversation came back to, well, what do you mean? Which takes us right back to the HUD definition of affordability, 80% AMI, 60% AMI, 0 to 30% AMI. And then people say, well, what does that mean? And it's back to housing that's less than market rate for people who work and people of lower income and very low income. I mean, so it's a big sort of non-virtuous circle of semantics. What we mean when we are talking about affordable housing for these particular ordinances is to do a study and look at the range of options all the way from zero up to 80% AMI. And when proposals finally come before this board, we will be talking about very specific levels of affordability and for whom. And if people stick around for a few minutes, we're going to hear from the North Northeast Housing Oversight Committee, and we're going to be very specific about affordability and home ownership and the challenges that are there, particularly for our Black community, but that are generally applicable to the entire community. So I don't want us to get too bogged down on what we mean when we're talking about affordable housing, except to say at various levels of affordability for various people at this point. This is a study. Very good. Now, I understand we have some representatives from the Rossi, Giusto, and Guerra families potentially here today. Do you want to come up and say a few words? We'd love to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Mayor, I have one more person who I took the sign-in sheet to earlier.
Oh, I apologize. Sure. And if you could call the last person up for public testimony, we'll let them do it first. You can just cool your heels right there.
John Hollister.
Mr. Hollister, thank you. I apologize. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is John Hollister, and I have been accused lately of having a total lack of awareness of the housing inequities that exist in Portland. After our conversation, Madeline Kovacs from Portland for Everyone recommended I read the book titled The Color of Law. After reading only 35 pages, I was sick to my stomach. After finishing the book, I came away with outrage towards our past leaders, not just in Portland, but throughout the country, that caused and continue to perpetuate the most heinous of housing inequities. The Portland housing crisis has a number of serious issues, but in my mind, there is one tragedy that stands above them all: housing for people of color. There are several things that I became aware of from reading this book. FDR's awesome New Deal that I learned about in school, both employment and low-cost housing programs excluded African Americans. The Federal Housing Administration and Veterans Administration refused to insure home loans to African Americans. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and other major banks had the same policy. In December 1949, this practice was outlawed. But the law did not take effect until February 15th, 1950. Developers rushed to get their projects on record before the February deadline. Sounds very familiar. In the 1950s, cities across the nation increased minimum lot sizes to make affordable housing impossible. Also sounds very familiar. On page 238 of this book, the following quote: "What's important is that until we arouse in Americans the understanding of how we created a system of unconstitutional state-sponsored de jure segregation and a sense of outrage about it, neither remedies nor reparations will be on the public agenda." The Color of Law also debunks the theory that all housing is good housing. Oversupplying cities with market rate and luxury apartments continues to create even more segregated communities. In March 2014, Housing Commissioner Dan Saltzman dedicated an additional $20 million to affordable housing to begin address the ongoing threat of displacement and gentrification. As much as I applaud this effort, it's simply not enough. How about in 2018 we add another $200 million to address this problem? How about we start on a much smaller scale, prohibit displacement of single moms of color? We are creating incredible instability for their children who move from school to school, spiraling deeper into fear, anger, and isolation. Give these women and their children a chance. They need affordability, family-size housing. I am just an old, empathetic white guy with average intelligence, and I can't possibly understand the Black experience. But from this day forward, on this issue, you can consider me an awakened and outraged American. Together we can do better, much better.
So I would like to thank you, Mr. Hollister, for your testimony, and I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your testimony and the preparation that goes into your testimony. So I have been provided a color as of my a color of law book, as have all of my colleagues. And I don't know if you can see this on the TV, but it is both tabbed and annotated with the appropriate sections with little dots. I will read that. And again, I appreciate, I mean, I can't even imagine how much time and energy you put into this. And I can feel your passion all the way up here. And I do appreciate it. Thank you. And your testimony is not only germane to these two ordinances, it is directly responsive to the conversation we're going to have with the North Northeast Housing Oversight Report. So thank you for that testimony. Good morning. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate it.
Good morning. I'm Joe Rossi, one of the Rossi Giusto Gary family members. And I brought a guest, Annette Stanhope, who is the president of the Park Rose Neighborhood Association. Also invited was Doug Cook. He's out of town, and he sent his regrets. He couldn't come and sit in. I just want to say I'm excited about this opportunity to begin a conversation with our community about master planning, what our farmlands could be. I think it's an amazing opportunity because 32 acres between a brand new park, thanks a lot to your work, Amanda. Our community loves it. It's well attended. Lewitt View Park is here, and Shaver School, primary school, middle school, and high school, post office. So we have all the bones of what could be a really awesome walking community, and we're also just off the corridor, the Columbia Corridor. So I really vision this. As a property owner, we don't have the ability to begin a grand conversation of what these properties could be developed to its highest use, and this process allows us that. I really see Corky Collier from the Corridor Association and Annette and Doug and then Mangus Mapes, who is our historic Park Rose district manager, beginning a conversation of really what these properties could be. It's a clean slate, and it's very timely because these properties are owned by six people, but eventually with time, an apartment developer, somebody's going to come, and they have an agenda. It's 50 units here, and what's best for the whole property and community is really not in their best interest. They just really need to rush the development because time is money. But we have immigrant families who fled adversity and starvation in Italy from a few villages come and farm all these years. And thus, all this property has been undeveloped. And in the 1960s, apartment developers built a lot of product, and we have a lot of urban sprawl. And it passed over us because we were just humble farmers this whole time. And anyways, I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity. The conversation is what means the most to me with our neighbors, and it'll be a year and a half, probably a two-year process to see what this could do. But we were granted with the new zoning some real flexible zoning. So whatever the need is in the community is really what the property owners would want, because that was what will make the project the most successful. And I also want everybody to know I'm available for any questions. I'll be following this process step by step. You'll have a volunteer person who will make sure that this is done right, because it's a legacy for our joint families and also Park Rose.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Appreciate your working with the city staff and the community to make something really great for the community here.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if you had some comments as well.
I just wanted to say that the Park Rose Neighborhood Association is in support of this particular project, and we feel that having a methodical and intelligent investigation into the potential for this property will make sure that it will be used for the best use for the community.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Colleagues, any further discussion on this item or further questions? Very good. Carla, please call the roll first on item number 313.
Fish?
Well, this is very exciting, and I want to thank all the families that are driving this development plan and thank Metro for this grant. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, yes, I also want to thank the Rossi, Giusto, Gare families for their commitment to the Park Rose community, their commitment to the city of Portland to get it right here. This is a prime piece of property. As Joe Rossi just described, its proximity to a lot of things, probably most importantly, good jobs in the Columbia Corridor. So this is really ripe for some good, affordable housing, plus other things that are desired by the community of Park Rose. So very happy to accept this grant. Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, it's very fitting and also exciting that the first project that's coming through under the new comprehensive plan is the Rossi Farms and coordinated development with your neighbours. For those of you who weren't here during the 4 years that we were doing the comprehensive plan, Joe Rossi was at every single hearing and consistently advocating for what's good for the community as well as what was good for the property owners. So I appreciate that. This could potentially create 850 housing units. So when we're talking about, I'm sure there's other developers who are just waiting till the end of May to smack down their application for the new high-rise with the fancy schmancy apartments or condominiums. This is going to be a mixed-use development that's going to truly develop 122nd Avenue, hopefully stimulate more transit on 122nd. There's already good transit on Sandy Boulevard. So this is going to help with a lot of different comprehensive plan matters. I'm particularly glad to see in the grant that there are stipends of $5,000 for the East, for one or more of the following organizations: EPAP, or the East Portland Action Plan, Community Alliance of Tenants, Immigrant Refugee Coalition, community organization. As Mr. Rossi reflected, it's going to take the whole community planning this, and including those who have been displaced from elsewhere a long time ago from Italy or recently from various other countries. This is a very vibrant community with a very high percentage of students at both Park Rose Middle School and Park Rose High School being low-income students and students of color. So I can't think of a better site to be doing this first project, and I'm really excited to see that the changes that we make in the planning realm are going to translate very quickly into on-the-ground improvements in this area. I was especially glad to see that the deliverable is that building permits will be cut within the first year after the end of the grant, and I think that's a worthy goal, which I hope we all work together. Thank you very much to all involved. Thanks to the Bureau of Planning. Aye.
Wheeler?
Thanks to Metro for selecting these important projects for grant funding. The partnership in our regional government is obviously an important part of successful planning. I'd also especially like to thank the families, the Rossis, the Giustos, the Guerra families. I'd like to thank the Park Rose School District and the Neighborhood Association, and I'm pleased to see the chair here this morning speaking in support of these proposals, and all the other folks in the community who have worked hard to bring this to this stage today. I'd also like to thank the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, the Interfaith Alliance on Poverty, Living Cully, Rose Community Development, Multnomah County, and others for their support of the, and I'm going to use the term, Affordable Housing in Faith Communities Grant, because that is the name of the grant. But I was particularly pleased to hear the conversation that we had today around affordability and what it actually means and for whom. And that should be front and center as we go through with this development strategy. So, like my colleagues, I'm looking forward to seeing the outcomes of these grant-funded projects. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Please call 314.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I think this interfaith initiative has limitless opportunities. When you think about all the faith communities in the city of Portland and all of them who share a deep conviction around housing the poorest of the poor, and you think about all the big parking lots these churches have, they are well parked, most churches in the city of Portland. And there's a great opportunity here to have a mixed-use development supported by the faith community. And so I think this is a great grant, and I really look forward to seeing what the three opportunity sites that come forward first. And as I said, I think the potential is limitless here. Aye.
Udaly.
Got to get used to this new order.
I know, me too.
Well, similarly to the Rossi Farm development plan, it's heartening to see landowners, whether they're communities of faith or private landowners, being so intentional about how their property can be used to kind of its fullest potential including serving existing communities and providing affordable housing. So this is really, really exciting. Aye.
Fritz. I really like it when we have two ordinances we vote on in succession, because I can say what I forgot to say on the first one, and that is that we know that this land produces delicious fruits and vegetables. So when we do the concept plan, I hope you'll bear in mind a community garden would be really nice to have in there. Thank you. I'm very excited about this second grant, too, that we do need to be looking to faith communities, and they have been stepping up. This will provide some resources to do a very thoughtful evaluation of how three communities could help, which then can serve as a model for others. And government can't do it all. Government shouldn't do it all. Private people can't do it all by themselves. We need everybody to join together, and this is a really good way of doing this. I'm really happy to see that Metro is giving this grant also. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you, everybody, for your hard work on this. Next item.